You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. UC Davis Health is celebrating a milestone that's been decades in the making. A new study is helping restore communication for people who can't speak due to paralysis or neurological conditions like ALS. The technology is called a brain-computer interface, also known as BCI. It's capable of translating brain signals into speech with up to 97% accuracy. UC Davis says that's the most accurate system of its kind. This device is part of an ongoing clinical trial dating back 20 years to restore the independence of people living with a neurological disease. There's still more work to do before it's available to the general public, but this latest success marks an exciting moment. Regular Insight host Vicky Gonzalez sat down with Dr. David Brandman with the Department of Neurological Surgery. He's also co-director of the UC Davis Neuroprosthetics Lab. He was joined by postdoctoral fellow Dr. Nicholas Card to get a better understanding of this new technology and when it could scale up beyond a clinical trial. And just a note, UC Davis Health is a financial supporter of CAP Radio.
Dr. Brandman and Dr. Card, thank you for coming to Insight.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. You know, this study is just fascinating. I mean, of course, the end result is epic. You're restoring communication for someone who has lost the ability to speak. I mean, to say that's life-changing is just an understatement. But really, for me, the fascinating part was the process, the advancements I would think would be needed to accomplish something like this, as well as the time needed to accomplish something like this. It seems like that finish line was really no easy feat. Dr. Brandman, how long has this been in the works?
That's a great question. I'm going to answer that by talking a little bit about brain-computer interfaces, and we'll get up to the point of saying how long we've been at this and what we've really done that's pushed the field forward in this recent publication. So what's a brain-computer interface, or a BCI? So a brain-computer interface is a device that records brain signals from people that are paralyzed and then translates those brain signals to allow them to control objects in their environment using their minds. So the research that you're talking about has actually happened as part of an ongoing clinical trial called BrainGate 2. So BrainGate 2 is an early feasibility study, which means we're studying the safety profile of chronically implanted electrodes in people with paralysis. So this is an ongoing study, and it's been going on for over 20 years.
Wow.
And it's been happening at multiple clinical trial sites, including UC Davis, Stanford, Emory, as well as Mass General Hospital in the Providence VA. The idea is people with paralysis, people with living with brainstem strokes or spinal cord injuries or ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, or other kinds of neuromuscular diseases, enroll in a clinical trial and then undergo implantation of microelectrode arrays or implantation of arrays into their brain that are designed to record from individual neurons or individual nerve cells in the brain. And so while the clinical trial is designed to study the safety profile of these devices, volunteers in this clinical trial use their time and their energy to work with our scientific teams to develop the next generation neuroprosthetics. So research under the BrainGate 2 clinical trial has been going on for over 20 years, and the emphasis for the last few years in the clinical trial has moved from what was previously done, which is cursor control. In other words, translating the intention to move your hand into a computer cursor that moves on a screen, or translating your intention to move your hand into robotic arm control. In the last few years, we've transitioned that to communication through speech. The idea being that we want to be able to restore communication to people with paralysis simply by having them trying to speak.
When I first learned of the study, before I actually dove into it and read it, and you have UC Davis Health has a great video companion piece as well to make it very visual so people can understand who don't work in the neuroscience or live in the neuroscience world, I am included in that. The first thing I thought about, or really the first person I thought about, was physicist Stephen Hawking and how he was able to communicate. How is that different than what you're working on now, Dr. Card?
Yeah, so Stephen Hawking did not have a device recording his brain signals. He used an assistive communication device, which I believe was controlled through eye movements or maybe a cheek twitch, I can't quite remember, that allowed him to sort of cycle through the letters of the alphabet and select one at a time to build sentences, and then he could play it aloud using, you know, his iconic robotic voice. And I think an interesting note about that is, like, as, you know, as life went on, and he was offered sort of upgraded voices that would sound more like him. By that point, the robotic voice had just become his identity there, and he chose to keep it. So the difference here is, like, we are recording brain signals, and we are translating the intention to speak into words that appear on a screen. So using these assistive communication devices like eye tracking is really non-intuitive, and Stephen Hawking was apparently, you know, in the top percent of, like, people that could use these devices effectively. But for a lot of people, it's really hard and takes a lot of time to learn to select letters with your eyes or something else non-intuitive. But everybody, or most people, know how to try to speak. And if we can build a device that allows somebody to communicate who cannot otherwise just by trying to speak, that is probably the most intuitive way.
And this latest milestone was made possible because of your participant, Casey Harrell. Tell us about him.
I'll start by saying he's an extraordinary man. And we, as a scientific team, are so grateful for this time and energy in terms of working with us so that we can learn more about how the human brain works and then develop neuroprosthetics to help other people moving forward. I can tell you, he's a 45-year-old man, or rather a 46-year-old man living with ALS, who's within a three-hour driving distance of Sacramento, and he lives with ALS, and he, when he tries to speak, it's very difficult for him to be understood, and he often requires the help of a care partner to help translate his otherwise difficult to understand speech into words. And I think one of the reasons that this technology is so transformative is that it empowers him to say whatever he wants to say whenever he wants to say it. He no longer needs to have a care partner beside him translate on his behalf. He can just say what he wants to say, and our brain-computer interface translates his intention to speak into words that appear on the screen. And one thing that's really not captured in a lot of these videos, or one thing that's maybe lost on some listeners, or maybe one thing that is really incredible about this technology, is that not only does it empower him, but it also means there's less stress on his care partners. Just imagine if every time you tried to speak, someone had to speak on your behalf. Firstly, that's a huge amount of time investment on whoever is speaking on your behalf having to be there at your side. And second, you're really speaking through a proxy and through their best understanding of what you're trying to say. So this technology is transformative because it empowers him to say what he wants to say and allows his care partners to really go about their life.
In the video companion piece that UC Davis Health put together, we actually do get to hear Casey communicate through this device. And I'm going to play a clip where he's expressing what has been lost with that inability to speak and communicate.
Not being able to communicate is so frustrating and demoralizing. It is like you are trapped. Having something like this will give them hope and opportunity to be more of themselves.
I mean, Dr. Card, I mean, of course there is science and research behind this, but the human piece is front and center. And I think the science is so important, but I also want to give pause to what Casey expressed through this brain-computer interface device.
Yeah, I mean, I think this story is very tightly entwined between the science and the engineering and the clinical side and then the real human emotional element of it. Yeah, as David has said, Casey is an extraordinary guy, and it's throughout this entire process been really rewarding to work with him and get to know him, especially as he's speaking to us, you know, through our own technology, and even just little things, to see him say hi to his daughter, or for them to conveniently have some old friends come over during a research session so that they could chat or something. Everybody that got to see him and talk to him, their faces really lit up, and it's just been a great experience for me.
Your colleague, UC Davis neuroscientist Sergei Stavisky, he expressed this in that video piece from UC Davis Health. And I want to play it because it was just such a touching moment and a very human moment behind all the work that all of you do.
Okay, ready?
That first time that he tried to speak and that word appeared on the screen. He started crying, I started crying, his family started crying, basically everyone. We had to pause, we stopped the rest of that walk of experiment trials, everyone composed themselves, and we're like, all right, let's do it again, and it kept working. So yeah, it was really special, it was a special moment.
With that moment, and how understandably emotional it was for so many people, I think it captures how much not only Casey's life can change, but his loved ones' lives can change in just a short period of time of taking part in this trial, in this study.
That's very well said, yeah.
And I think another important piece of this, you mentioned that that drive could be 3 hours, but it's not Casey going to you all. You all are going to him.
That's right, yeah. So part of the inclusion criteria for the clinical trial is that you live within 3 hours driving distance of one of the clinical trial sites, in this case, Sacramento. And so the idea being that we want to build a practical device for people, and a practical device doesn't work in a laboratory in a highly controlled environment. A practical device works in someone's home when you want to use it.
Another piece that I thought was so cool is that when you're listening to the voice that is transcribing or decoding what Casey wants to say, it actually sounds similar to Casey's voice. Dr. Card, can you explain how that's even possible?
Yeah, so Casey fortunately had videos of him, whether they were home videos or interviews or things for work, of just him speaking in his, obviously in his own voice. And we were able to take those videos and sort of make a deep fake text-to-speech program. So now we have this algorithm where we can give it any text and it will read it in a voice that sounds very much like his. And, you know, of course, none of us scientists knew him prior to having ALS, but we've heard from a lot of his family and friends that, like, wow, it really does surprisingly sound like him. One interesting note about that is that a good chunk of, like, the high-quality audio that we had from him prior to ALS was sort of in a interview-slash-speech format. So sometimes the voice is very, like, formal and speechy, which I think they get a kick out of.
Yeah. Well, I know for myself, the tone of my voice can change, you know, just depending on who I'm talking to, depending on the circumstance, the venue, you know, what have you. So I it's nice that they can find enjoyment and get a kick out of that as well. When it comes to the vocabulary, how does that work? Because that seems like a lift in and of itself. And the translation of brain signals into speech, it's up to 97%. Accuracy, according to this study. So how do you do that?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about how the process actually works. How do we actually get these brain signals out and then allow for communication, right? So essentially what we're doing is we're recording from a population of neurons or individual nerve cells within the brain. And as Casey tries to speak, we are recording these brain signals and then translating those brain signals into the fundamental units of English language or language in general, being the phoneme. So, for example, if I wanted to say the word hello, I could break the word hello into ha, l, o. And essentially, what we do is that every 80 milliseconds, we take a look at the brain signals, and then using artificial intelligence, we translate those brain signals into one of 39 different English phonemes. And then, using further advances in machine learning and artificial intelligence, we translate the sequence of phonemes into words, and then words into cogent sentences. Right. So essentially what we're doing is translating his intention to speak into words themselves. This is not a mind reading device. Right. So we don't get to
you don't get the inner monologue.
We don't get the inner monologue. Right. In fact, what we're doing is precisely getting the intention to speak. He's got to want to say it for us to be able to hear it. Right. And that was really important, at least from a privacy concern. Right. It's like, I don't want anyone else to hear my inner thoughts. Right.
I don't know who does.
Exactly. Right. So it turns out the way we're going about decoding is that we are only decoding his intention to speak as part of doing this. So now that we have a series of words, where does this 125,000 word vocabulary come into play? Well, the answer is, it turns out the average English speaker, native English speaker, knows between 30 and 50,000 words, roughly. So 125,000 covers many more words than at least I know what to say. And our algorithms are designed to take those series of phonemes into one of those 125,000 words. Now, let's say there's a word that doesn't show up in the dictionary, right? A piece of slang, a proper noun, and so on and so forth. We have actually empowered him to be able to add new entries into the dictionary. There's a spelling mode that Nick actually created where he types in the spelling mode, types in whatever he wants to say, you know, a name, for example, says it, and then that word subsequently gets added to the dictionary so that he can just say it until the next time.
And just to clarify, by type, David means he says the actual letters. So, you know, if he was trying to say the word hello and for some reason that word wasn't in the dictionary, he would then try to say H-E-L-L-O and we would just turn that into the word.
Hello. Oh, that's amazing. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm host Vicky Gonzalez, and we're talking with Dr. David Brandman with the Department of Neurological Surgery at UC Davis Health, as well as postdoctoral fellow Dr. Nicholas Card, about a new device which is currently in clinical trials that restores communication for people who can't speak due to paralysis or conditions like ALS. We only have a few minutes left, and I just think it's appropriate to close in the final minutes with Casey again, communicating how this has shaped his life and also his family's life in just the short time that he's had this technology.
It feels a lot like me. It makes people cry who have not heard me in a while. I hope that we are at a time when everyone who is like me have the same opportunity as I do to have a device like this that will help them communicate.
Yeah, and I want to end with that last note. What goes into scaling this up and getting beyond a clinical trial, a study, or an investigational level?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So, you know, if I were to meet a patient today with ALS, I would love to say, you know, Ms. Smith, I'm sorry that you've been diagnosed with ALS. Recognizing we don't have a cure, at least we're going to have you communicating with your family so that you can tell them you love them, even though you live with paralysis. We're not there yet. Right. And so there are a few important steps to get from where we are today to a point where I can prescribe Ms. Smith this operation to restore communication. The first is the form factor. So right now, this is a device that is not yet fully implantable the way that I'm used to implanting devices for my neurosurgical practice. You know, in neurosurgery, I specialize in neuromodulation and helping people living with epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, and so on and so forth. And in those patient populations, I have access to devices that are fully implanted, that are provided by medical device companies, that have batteries, and we understand the risks and complications, as well as the benefits these devices can provide patients. And where we are right now with BCI technology is we're at an inflection point. We're at a very exciting time where academic laboratories like ourselves, have de-risked the idea that brain-computer interfaces could restore communication for people. And there are now a series of companies out there that have devices they developed with form factors that are fully implanted that are either actively recruiting or plan to actively recruit patients for their clinical trials that are coming up. So I think within the next 5 or 10 years, I may be able to meet this hypothetical Ms. Smith and let her know, look, I have a device that will help you restore communication. We're not there yet, but we're getting there because of incredible volunteers like Casey, who are working with scientific teams to allow us to develop the next generation of technologies.
Are you still recruiting for this study?
In fact, we are. Yeah. So if you are, or if you know someone who lives with paralysis within 3 hours driving distance of Sacramento, and was interested in learning more about the BrainGate clinical trial, please reach out. So you can contact me directly at braingate@ucdavis.edu. That's braingate@ucdavis.edu. Or you can go to our website, braingate.org, to learn more information.
Dr. Card, I'll end with you. You're a postdoctoral fellow taking part in this. What has excited you most about being part of this study?
Well, getting to work with people like Casey and getting to work on this really exciting technology where you can just see it benefit somebody's life is really amazing. And it makes me excited about what this type of technology is going to look in just 5 or 10 years, as David was alluding to, and how this can benefit the lives of people like Casey.
Well, thank you both so much for doing the work and sharing it with us here on Insight.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Insight host Vicky Gonzalez speaking with Dr. David Brandman from the Department of Neurological Surgery at UC Davis Health. He's also the co-director of the UC Davis Neuroprosthetics Lab. Dr. Brandman was joined by postdoctoral fellow Dr. Nicholas Card to talk about a new device currently in clinical trials that helps restore communication for people who can't speak due to paralysis or neurological conditions like ALS. And again, UC Davis Health is a financial supporter of CAP Radio. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.